So anyway, I never dreamed that I would actually get to talk about it. I was in Omaha a couple weeks ago and here, and then I'm in Phoenix in a week and a half and doing a thing for a group in Minnesota in December. It's been this crazy ride, this most enjoyable ride, I must say. And simply put, I don't think my message is too complex. I like to say I have a pretty simple message, and the simple message is that there is more joy in pursuing less than can be found in pursuing more. There is more joy and more fulfillment in pursuing less than can be found in pursuing more. Unfortunately, since the moment we were born, we have been told the exact opposite. We have been told every day of our life through every advertisement, 3,000 ads we see every day, whether it be television, radio, newspaper, magazines, internet, billboards in other states. But wherever it is, we have been always told that we are to pursue more and that we will be more happy, more content once we achieve more. We've been told to work hard, to earn good money so that we can buy bigger and nicer homes, so that we can buy newer cars, so that we can buy the cutest fashions. Cutest fashions. I thought that was a good connection with the ladies. So we can get the cutest fashions so that we can buy the most popular toys or the latest technology. And somehow, when we begin accumulating all of these things, our life will be better. It will be more joyful. Unfortunately, we all know that isn't true. I think we all know that possessions do not equal happiness. It's just that we've been told it for so long that we just start to believe it, our heart starts to buy into it, and it begins to affect the way we live our lives. And I come with a simple message that there is more joy in pursuing less than can be found in pursuing more, and I think I've found that the message rings true with most people when they hear it. And so that's all I have this morning. That's all I want to do. That's all I want to talk about. I like to think I'm here just to remind you of what you already know to be true. So here's how I want to do it. First, I want to tell you a little bit about our story, a little bit about how we got to the point where we're at today. Second of all, three just somewhat broad principles of simplicity or minimalism. I'll use the terms interchangeably, simplicity and minimalism, but I think minimalism just focuses on owning less stuff, owning less possessions. I think simplicity is a bit broader and starts to work itself out into other things that we do with our life. But a couple principles of that. And then number three, time at the end just for some question and answers if you want to get into some specific things and some specific topics. But let me start with my story. They say that discontent is the greatest seed of change in our lives. And we found that to be true. We had two avenues of discontent that were going through our lives, that were working through our lives. One that I was keenly aware of, and the other one I couldn't quite put my finger on it till Memorial Day weekend 2008. The first avenue of discontent that was flowing through my life was that I was never happy with our finances. I was never happy with the money piece of our life. Not that I wasn't making enough money, but I was never content with the fact that we were always living paycheck to paycheck to paycheck. Never were in a ton of debt, never had a huge credit card bill, but the mortgage and student loans and those types of things were always hanging over us. But the fact that it was always just from 1 week to 1 week to 1 week, or 2 weeks by 2 weeks by 2 weeks, and always knowing that just one lost job, or just one major housing expense, or one medical emergency, and our life would be completely thrown into shambles. Just never content with that. Also, concerning our money, I was never happy with the things that I was spending my money on. I was never happy where my money was going. Grew up in a church and are pretty familiar with Jesus' teachings on giving to the poor and taking care of people who are less fortunate than you. And I was just never able to do that. I was never as generous with my finances as I always wanted to be, but always felt like it was always spending on us, never being able to step outside of ourselves and help somebody else. So I had that very clear avenue of discontent in my life. The second avenue, which I wasn't keenly aware of, although I felt something wasn't right, and I sum it up this way, that I was discontented with the focus of my life's energy. And what I found out was that my life's energy was going more towards the stuff that I owned rather than the people in my life. And I knew that I wanted to invest more in my family, and I wanted to be more involved with my friends and the people that I knew. But instead, I was always having to be focused on the things in my life. Now, this became incredibly clear on this Memorial Day weekend, 2008, which basically changed our lives forever. So it was Memorial Day, so it was springtime right after the winter in Vermont, and of course that means spring cleaning. It was going to be a beautiful weekend, incredibly nice and sunny, which you don't always get in the spring, but it was going to be nice, and so we said, okay, Saturday, we're going to tackle some projects around the house. I, of course, work on Sundays, and then on Monday, we would finally get to be able to enjoy the holiday weekend. My job was going to be the garage, and Kim was going to work inside the house a little bit. You know how garages get in Vermont in the winter, right? That was going to be my project, and I was pretty sure that my six-year-old son, Salem, would enjoy helping me clean the garage. To this day, I don't know why I thought he was going to enjoy helping me clean the garage, but I thought he would, so I thought I'd have a little time with him. I got about 3 minutes out of the deal, as best I remember. Got up early, went out to the garage, and began pulling everything out, and had my son Salem handle the toys, and I think he got out the basketball and soccer ball, and once he reached the baseball and the baseball bat, he was gone. I mean, he was in the backyard. He was begging me to come pitch to him and play catch with him. And I said, no, I can't. You know, we got to do this. This is the job I got to get done. And then we can finally do some stuff after I handle all of this. So this project, of course, took longer than I had hoped and longer than I had expected. Pulled everything out of the garage and started cleaning it down, a little hosing it down and the floor and all those pieces. Went inside for an early lunch, came back outside to start putting things in. It's about 3 or 4 hours into this project now. My neighbor has been outside most of the time as well, not doing the garage, but cleaning up the shrubs and the leaves and just like you do in springtime. She happened to notice that I was still working on the garage, that my son was in the backyard on the swing set begging me to come push him on the swing. And she sarcastically says to me, "Oh, the joys of home ownership." And I said, "Yeah, well, you know what they say, the more stuff you own, the more your stuff owns you," which is something I had said and thought that I knew what it meant and thought that I believed it. And so that's just kind of my typical response. "Yeah, well, you know, the more stuff you own, the more your stuff owns you." And she says, "Yeah, that's why my daughter's a minimalist. She keeps telling me I don't need all this stuff." I thought, a minimalist. I don't know what that means, but I really like the sound of it now. That was it. That was the extent of the conversation. I said, interesting, whatever. And so I went, and I found Kim, who I think I remember was in the bathroom at the time, and she was, you know, scrubbing the bathtub. And I said, "Kim, you wouldn't believe this conversation I just had with Joan. She says that her daughter's a minimalist." And Kim, as she's on her knees scrubbing the bathtub, says, "I think I'm in. Why don't you go look it up?" I said, "Okay." So I ran over to the computer and I looked it up. I don't know what I searched, how to become a minimalist, something like that. And of course, there's some artwork stuff that you get as a search. But the more I started looking, the more I found this world open up of these people all around the country, all around the world, who have made an intentional decision that they were only going to live with the things that they needed. They were only going to live with the absolute essentials for their life, and they were going to rid themselves of everything else. And this, of course, plays itself out differently if you're 20 years old in college as it does if you're, a guy in a suburb with 2 children or 4 children, whatever. It was playing itself out differently in these different people's lives. However, there was one common theme. They were all singing the praises of minimalism. And they were talking about how freeing it was and how there was less stress and how it made their life so much better. And I said, I think we're in. Let's look into this. Called my mom, who lives in South Dakota. And I said, "Hey, Mom, I think we're going to become minimalist." And she goes, "Oh, I was just watching Oprah," which You know, I know I'm going to hate the rest of this conversation whenever she starts with that. I was just watching Oprah, and they were interviewing a bunch of minimalists. Did you know that they don't go to the grocery store, but they just get food out of dumpsters? And I said, no, I didn't read that part. I knew at that moment, however, that my minimalism, that my simplicity was going to look different from theirs. And at that very moment, I knew that the way we were going to practice it was going to come out differently than the way anybody else was embracing this lifestyle of living with just the essentials. A little bit later on that evening, my uncle calls me, you know, small town South Dakota. So my uncle calls me and says, "Hey, I heard about this minimalism deal you guys are into. And I just want you to know that I went online and I couldn't find anything about it." And I, of course, knew that I had found some not too bad, but I also know that he thinks that you have to go to yahoo.com before you can get to any other website on the internet. So I'm like, well, okay. But he goes, "I couldn't find anything about it. You guys should start something and talk about it." And I thought, well, there's probably a good idea to keep my mom up to date that we're still using grocery stores. I thought, you know, it might be interesting for them just to hear, you know, what we're doing and the rooms that we're going for through and what we're keeping and what we're getting rid of. And so that night, the website was born. I didn't know what to call it, so Becoming Minimalist just seemed fitting. And the website was born then 2.5 years ago. We spent the first year and a half just kind of telling our story. We're going through the bathroom today. We're going through our wardrobe. Here's some things that we're noticing about our lives, some things that we're seeing. Just writing about our story until last February, we got to the point where, you know, it's not too exciting to say we're going through our bathroom for the second time. This is, again, a little redundant. And we shifted focus a little bit and said, well, rather than just telling what we're doing, let's start helping other people live it out. We had had people who had come to the website from, you know, even when we just first started, and they're like, "Hey, I love this idea. Love what you guys are doing. I just went and emptied out a bunch of my clothes." And they were commenting on it, so I knew people were reading it, but I said, let's try to inspire people and help other people to embrace this lifestyle. Came out with the book in February, really shifted the what we were writing and what we were putting out there. And since then, the website is just, I mean, it's just exploded. We'll do about 300 to 400,000 hits every single month. People who stop by the website, the book, people buy the books, and I get to do these newspaper deals and the radio, and it's been this amazingly fun ride, I think, just reminding people what their heart already knows to be true. The name of the book, the first book, is which kind of deals with the possessions that we have, is called Simplify, 7 Guiding Principles to Help Anyone Declutter Their Home and Life. You would think I would have a shorter title, but I think it describes pretty well what the book is, and I think when people hear that, they're like, yeah, I need that in my life as well. So that's the name of the book, and as I mentioned, it goes through 7 guiding principles. What I want to do is just hit on 3 of them, hit on probably the, you know, beginning, middle, and end, the 3 principles that kind of override the whole thing, and then leave 4 out there, which should motivate you to get the book. So let's do 3 of the guiding principles. And the first one that I tell everyone, the first step in anyone simplifying life or choosing to live with less is simply that they have to be convinced of the benefits. They have to be convinced that less really is more, that there really is a more fulfilling lifestyle in owning less than owning more. It's the message that we've been told completely opposite our entire lives. I tend to believe that our life will always match what is in our heart. Like, what our heart believes and what our heart holds to be true will always affect the way we live our lives. I think we can fake it for a little while. Our mind can, you know, just willpower can change our actions for a little while, and we can force us into a different mold of life. But unless our heart really buys into the change, we'll always default back to what our heart really holds to be most true. And so to that end, I think the most important step, the first step, is just being convinced in your heart that there really is benefits to embracing this lifestyle. So let's do this. Wherever you are, 2, 3, 4, maybe just kind of huddle up in a little group. And let me ask you this. How would your life be better if there were less things in your home? Okay? If there were less things in your home, what would be the benefit to your life? How would it look better? You'll probably come up with a couple right off the top of your head and just kind of list them with each other and see if you can think of a few more, and then I'll give you a chance to share some of them. What'd you come up with? Less to clean. Funny, because each time I've done this, women always come up with less to clean first. I always say, I love when things are clean, but I hate the process of cleaning. Minimalism scratches that itch. I just own less things, and it is easier to keep it clean. Beautiful. What else? More time. Okay, more time in what way? Beautiful. Consider for a moment how much time our things take away from us. There's the cleaning piece, there's the organizing, there's the maintaining or the fixing, the moving, the reorganizing, there's the removal of it when we finally decide to get rid of it. Add on the front end, there's the shopping to go buy the thing that we originally wanted, maybe whether it's the time to go to the store or the research that we put in to go into the actual process. The average American spends 4 hours a week shopping. Not to mention, how much time do we spend on the front end working so that we can earn the money so that we can go shopping to buy the thing that we can take home to clean and organize and maintain and fix and then finally get rid of when we're done with it. Huge amount of time we gain back when we own less things. What else? More creativity. Do tell me what you mean by that. A couple thoughts on that. Number one, I sat down one day to think through, okay, what would be the benefits of owning fewer toys? I came up with 10 benefits in like no time. I mean, more creativity, more sharing. They take better care of their toys. It's easier for them to clean up at the end of the day. I just had a long list of them. So I think it is more creativity for our children. Also, I think it's more creativity for us. One of the first things I did was went through my office and got rid of all my old books that I've never used, or even the ones that I do, some of my old books from college, which were 10 years ago. The next morning when I came into work and I had a problem, something that came across my desk, what I always would have done before when I saw this problem is I would have gone over to my old textbooks. I would have gone to my solution from 10 years ago or 5 years ago and applied it to the same problem today. However, I didn't have the books to go back to, and so suddenly I was able to creatively come up with new solutions to new problems rather than relying on the old things as well. Good insight. Others? Okay. A couple others. We spend less, a little bit into the shopping piece, but I don't know if you live your life in debt or you're on the paycheck to paycheck lifestyle, but the less things you're buying, the less things you're accumulating, the less money you are spending on them. It's a great example for our children. It's a great example for our kids. I don't know how many homes in America where the three most common words are, I want that, or I need that, or let's go shopping. You hear those phrases far more often than I love you or let's play together or let's just be together. I don't know how many words that is, but let's be together. That's three. So I think that when we begin to live a lifestyle of contentment and not always needing the next greatest thing or wanting the thing that's on sale, our kids are able to embrace that lifestyle a little bit easier as well. A certain piece of it that is helpful for the environment, of course. Less consumption we're going through, the less resources we're going through, the better that is for the environment on the front end, not to mention the disposal on the back end. There's less worry. There's less shopping. It's easier to travel. I think all of them come together to the greatest benefit of owning less, which is the opportunity to pursue your passions. Owning less allows you to direct your energy, direct your focus and your effort towards the things that you most value in life. And whenever you ask the question, what do I value most in life? Rarely do I come up with the things in my living room or the things in my garage, but I often think of my children. I think of my family, or I think of being an influence in the people's lives that are around me. Suddenly, when we own less things, we are less tied to the things that we own. We have more time. We have more finances. We have more energy. We have more availability to pursue the things that are really most important to us and really start to breathe life into who we are. Does that make sense? So those are some of the benefits, and I think they all ring true. It's funny because I don't know if anyone ever thinks of how would my life be better if I own less stuff, and yet once you hear the question, you're like, oh, yeah, that would be better. Oh, that would be better. Oh, that does sound pretty refreshing about now. So how then, if the first principle is be convinced of the benefits, how then do you start to live out the lifestyle or embrace it? And this is where it gets a little tough to be too specific, because I think it plays itself out in different people's lives, and people value different things, and what is essential to you is probably different from what's essential to me. And so just to kind of hit this broadly, the second step, the second principle then, is to identify your values and then jump right in. Identify your values and jump right in. We just jumped right in. I mean, we started that evening and we did a fine job of it. I think that as you go through the process, this values piece comes in. But the thing that surprised us was that minimalism, simplicity, is ultimately about identifying what is most important to us. And if we're going to get rid of everything that we don't need, then that requires us at one point to think through, okay, what do I need and why do I need it? And then what is distracting me from it? So I say minimalism is the intentional promotion of the things I most value and the removal of anything that distracts me from it. The intentional promotion of the things I most value and the removal of anything that distracts me from it. Dealing with just possessions, just the things that we own for a few minutes, I think I hear three broad questions that I hear from people. Number one, I don't know where to start. Where do I even start? Have you seen my house? Have you seen my living area? I have no idea where to start. And I say, start small. Start easy. Pick one room, pick one drawer, one cupboard, one closet. You don't have to do your whole house in one day, but pick one thing that's easy. I started in my cars. That was the first thing I did. The stuff in the garage was still out in the driveway, if you recall. Finally got everything in that evening, and when I drove my car in, I'm like, oh, what is all this stuff doing in my car? I haven't listened to this CD forever. Why is it in here? I don't need these receipts shoved in here. I don't need this much change. I don't need two pairs of sunglasses. I don't need the napkins in my glove compartment or the diaper. Actually, I did, but I didn't know why they were in there. And so so I just began taking everything out of my car that I didn't need. And then I did the same for my wife's minivan and just kind of moved it to somewhere else or threw it away or got rid of it, whatever it is. The following morning was a Sunday, and so I got up to go to work, and I sat in my car, and it was, oh, this feels so good. There's just not so much stuff distracting me and begging for my attention. This is so nice. And so we quickly did the living room. That was the next thing we did. It wasn't too difficult. We got rid of some decorations. What's this sunflower from picture from Walmart doing in here? Does this mean anything to anybody? And so we started getting rid of some of the decorations. We got rid of the magazines in the magazine rack, got rid of the DVDs that were just sitting out and the CDs that no one was ever going to listen to, the little pile of toys in the corner. We just pared it down to something that could just fit on the one shelf, and we just started removing things out of our living room that we didn't need, and suddenly it felt so good to sit in a living room that was just free and open, and it was so nice that it gave us the motivation to go through our closets and then go through the guest room and then build up harder and harder and harder. I ran my first marathon in May, which I love working the story in. So I ran my first marathon in May, and it was something that I always wanted to do. It was kind of a life's dream of mine to run a marathon, but the idea of running 26.2 miles just, how could I ever run 26.2 miles? Well, I saw a book that was How to Run Your First Marathon. So I'm like, okay, let's pick it up and see what it has to say. And so I open it up, and step number one, run 1 mile. All right. I think I can run 1 mile. Day number two, rest. All right. This is good. Day number three, run 1.5 miles. Day four, rest. Day five, run 2 miles. And it just kept adding higher and higher and higher. And suddenly it occurred to me that you don't run a mile, you don't run a marathon the first day you go out. You run 1 mile, and you build up, and you get momentum and motivation, and it eventually carries you through the entire 26.2 miles. It applies quite well, I think, to the idea of going through your home. Start easy. Start one room. Start in one place, and build up to the attic or the garage or the kitchen is quite a process, I think, and all the different elements that are in a kitchen. And just build your way up. Start easy and find the momentum and the motivation to keep going. Number two, I don't know when. I don't know when I would do this. When do you think I'm going to pull this off, Joshua? And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to fit into your schedule. I think if you could find 45 minutes one day to get started, if you could find 45 minutes to an hour just to tackle one project, to tackle one room in your house, that it would give you the motivation to find another hour the next day or 45 minutes 2 days from then. And again, I think it builds up. And after a moment in time, it literally saves you more time having less things than you can possibly imagine. And I think as you begin clearing things out, you begin finding more and more time to do those things. Number three, how do I do this? I don't know how to do this. And, I'm not assuming any of you are going to say, I'm in on this minimalism deal. I think most of you would say, I need to declutter. I'm not sure I'm going to become a minimalist. But to that end, I say, again, just start with the low-hanging fruit. I mean, start with the things in your house that you just know aren't being used and you just know that you don't need anymore. There's this 80-20 principle that we live through life where 20% of our things take 80% of our energy, or it can be applied, you wear 20% of your clothes 80% of the time. You drive on the same 20% of the roads 80% of the time, or you listen to the same 20% of the music 80% of the time, however that plays itself out. And so I say just start with the 80% that you know you're not going to use, you know you're not going to wear again, you know you just don't need in your house, and jump on that low-hanging fruit and just clear it out. And just like Mandy, it's so funny that they do this. Mandy, who did that video, she does this. Organizing, it's actually organizing.yourway.net, and she was the first person ever to ask me to do a guest post on her website. I don't even know where she lives, but she sent me an email, and I'm like, sure, I'll do a guest post, and then she started this new site, and so I'm this contributing author to the organizing side of her website. It's so funny that she's up there. But anyway, what she said is exactly what we did. We just looked at each object and said, okay, there's stuff that we're going to keep in this room. There's stuff that we're going to relocate to a different room. Why is a hammer in my junk drawer anyway? That we're going to relocate things. And then the third pile was just, we're going to remove. We're going to discard, whether we sell it or donate it or throw it away. And we just put each thing into the three different piles and organized our room that way. We can do, if there's some specific questions that you guys have, we can get to that in a moment. But first principle is be convinced. Second principle is jump right in. And then the third principle is this. Break the trend of consumerism in your life. We need to break this trend of consumerism in our life. We live in a country with this overriding culture of conspicuous consumption. I mean, just think of what is considered bad news these days. It is bad news when consumer confidence is low. It is incredibly bad news when consumer spending is down. It is bad news when 68% of families intend to spend equal amount or less than they spent at last year's holiday season. These are indicators that things are wrong in our country when spending is down. Unemployment, whatever it is, 9 point something these days. I mean, if you know, if someone's lost their job, it's kind of a big deal. But we got to get unemployment down. We got to get people back to work. Why? Because when people are working, they're making money so they can buy things. And when they're buying things, then there's more jobs for people to come and work. And then they're making money so they can buy things so that more people can go back to work, so that more people can buy things, so that more people can go back to work. And the cycle just continues over and over and over. We are an entire nation that is built on you spending money on stuff. At some point, we need to break this trend in our lives. And if you're worried about the economy, don't worry. I mean, if you're worried about you not spending is going to ruin the economy, don't worry about it. There's plenty of people spending money. You're going to be okay if you take a step off the hamster wheel for just a moment. But we need to break this culture of consumption. I think just realizing the culture that we're living in and how it promotes that lifestyle is helpful. Another helpful hint in breaking this trend of consumerism is just realizing that possessions don't equal joy. Realizing that owning, you know, that new cute sweater is not going to make your life that much more joyful. You might enjoy it the first or second time you wear it, but it's not going to lead to any lasting joy in your life. And getting off of that thinking that you're going to become more content when you buy that next thing. Possessions don't equal joy. Number three, a third helpful hint is just to consider the true cost of your purchases. Realizing that when I buy something at Walmart, it's not just the $10.90, the $10.88, whatever it is. You know, it's just not the $10.88 that I give to the cashier that is the true cost of that purchase. But you also got to add in, okay, organizing it and cleaning it and putting it away and fixing it and removing it, and how all of those things add into the true cost of everything that we buy and everything that we own. Number four, a fourth helpful hint is to embrace generosity with your life. Generosity is the external behavior of a contented heart. When we find contentment in our heart, we become more generous people. I do believe that when we begin practicing generosity on the outside, it begins to feed into a contented heart on the inside. We suddenly realize how much we really do have. We start to take better care of the things that we do have. And so when we become generous people, we become more contented people, which helps us break free of this cycle of always needing more and more and more. A fifth helpful hint is stop watching television. Television is selling you something. That is what makes television go. That is why television is essentially about somebody trying to sell you something. And if television did not work to sell you on something, then there would no longer be television. And so I know we think that we're immune and that us watching television doesn't change what we want or what we believe. And every advertising agency in the country, every marketer, every corporation would tell you the exact opposite. Actually, they do tell you the exact opposite when they spend billions and billions of dollars on advertisements. They don't spend billions and billions of dollars on advertisements because they think they could get you to buy their product. It's because they know they can get you to buy their product. Stop watching television. Begin to value the invisible things of life. Begin to value relationships more than the things that you own. And lastly, I just say, start to believe, start to realize that your life is far too valuable to live like everyone else. Your life is far too valuable to live like everyone else. Don't waste your life chasing after the things that everyone else is chasing after just because they're chasing after it. But realize that your life is meant for something far greater than owning a bigger house or a newer car or the cutest fashions. I have always considered simplicity as this incredible invitation. It is an invitation to a more fulfilling life. It is an invitation to a life with less stress and more energy for the things that we really want to do. And yet, it's a very quiet invitation. It's very subtle. And in a world that is clamoring as loud as it can that more is better, it takes a keen ear to hear an invitation to own less and live more because of it.